This is Ancient Afterlives, surprisingly modern ideas from the ancient world. This episode is presented by Kat Gwyther and Simeon Whiting, with our guest, Charlotte Trumbin.
So Charlotte is a PhD candidate and researcher at the University of Exeter, and her research focuses on, let me get this right, the use of combative metaphor and biblical imagery in global neo-muscular Christian groups.
That's right, yeah.
And she holds an honorary research associate position at the Centre for the Study of the Bible and Violence, but also has a wide range of research interests, including biblical violence, feminist hermeneutics, eco-theology, the theology of veganism, as well as the intersection of masculinity, theology and nationalism, which sounds absolutely fascinating. But today she's going to discuss with us her recent research on environmental violence, misogyny and the Bible, and I can't wait. So I think there's nothing left to say but welcome.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
This is super exciting. I'm just going to get kick off. What is this research about? Like, a quick summary.
Sure.
What is it and what are you saying?
Oh, sure. So this research paper in particular basically looks at the ways in which in the Bible, cities are often kind of embodied by this metaphor of women. So women become the cities. You have that with Jerusalem, you have that with Samaria, you have that with Babylon in Revelation. And my paper basically looks at the way in which this archetype of woman city has kind of fostered an environment and an attitude towards lands where they're invadable, commodifiable, plunderable, just like women's bodies are. And then what that kind of understanding means for how we approach environmental violence. So this paper kind of has potentially kind of controversial research in it, where I've looked at scholars who talk about environmental violence as the rape of land. So really I'm looking at the ways in which we, bodies of women and bodies of land are both kind of abused in the patriarchal system that we find ourselves today.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. It's interesting as well you say controversial. When I was reading this, I've been saying that I was just agreeing with you the entire way through, because the kind of connections between land and women seem so just obvious and there. And I suppose coming out then that I wanted to ask, the use of violence, environmental violence, I found really interesting, particularly because it's so different from the way that we often talk about climate change as like a, maybe in a more religious context, as something we can look after the environment and we can care for it. In a lot of climate change activism is focused, centered on this pastoral element of it, and you're using the term violence, and that seems kind of a jarring connection, I suppose. So maybe you could expand on what you mean by violence and why you think it's a useful word or tool to use in this context.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think to be honest, at an initial kind of presentation of this paper, it did jar quite a few people. But I think there are plenty of things now that we are coming to understand as violence in our society. Microaggressions towards communities, minority communities, systematic violence, police brutality, all of these things are kind of insidious violences that when we don't label them as violence, they become under-addressed. And it's really easy to kind of think, oh, I don't need to have anything to do with addressing this problem, because if it's not violence, then it's obviously not quite as important as other issues. So I can kind of brush this off and not get involved. And I think when we see the connection between women's bodies and the violence that is done to them, which is often, you know, it's talked about a lot more in the media these days, especially since the Me Too movement, especially since the Church's Too movement as well, in kind of more religious settings. again, like you said, the similarities between the way that we treat the environment and the way that we treat women's bodies, and then throughout history, this kind of intermingling of imagery of women's physicalities and the physical nature of land. We can't not talk about violence when we talk about environmental damage, because it is a symptom of the same system that is producing violence against women and violence against minority groups. So by talking about it as violence, what I want to do is really bring this into a conversation with other dialogues that are going on at the moment, where, you know, in terms of the Bible and violence, Christianity and violence, religious extremism and violence. Well, I mean, environmental violence is possibly one of the most extreme violences that humans are doing. And we're just not talking about it in that way. We talk about it peacefully. We talk about it with stewardship language, and we talk about it with care language, and we talk about, you know, hope for the future of a new creation. And by using the word violence, I think I kind of, I make it a really hard hitting, relevant, present concern that I want people to be thinking about right now, and that I want people to be dealing with right now. And if that's controversial language, I kind of, you know, I don't mind that. I don't reject that criticism, because I want people to be moved into action when they hear about what goes on in the environment, and also how those actions continue to perpetuate violence against women.
So in coming to write this paper, was it a matter of reflecting on some of these contemporary issues, you know, Me Too, climate crisis and all the rest of it, and then reading the Bible in the light of those issues? Or did he sort of come at it from the other way? Was it reading some of these actually quite troubling biblical portrayals of cities and the violent misogynistic language used there, and then kind of seeing the links with contemporary things?
Yeah, sure. To be quite honest, it was a mixture of both, really. So this paper has kind of been a culmination of lots of different threads of research that I've been involved in throughout time, kind of over the course of studying, which I've been doing over quite a number of years, because I took quite a big gap between my master's degree and then embarking on the kind of PhD study that I am on now. So I had quite a lot of time to read and mull on these issues. So my undergraduate dissertation focused on the treatment of animals by the church, and the way in which the separation between animals and humans had contributed to the ways in which we kind of oppress nature now. And then moving on into my master's degree, I started to look at be introduced to more feminist theology, and I started to look at specifically the Whore of Babylon as presented in Revelation, and I looked at her destruction as a rape scene, and kind of what we can do in terms of trauma theology, what we can do with this imagery as women coming to the text, reading the text, and also what this means for women who are involved in sex work, because obviously the Whore of Babylon is kind of introduced as this sexually ravenous woman. So, you know, what kinds of things can we do when we're reading this text that don't just kind of isolate a whole group of people from what is supposed to be the triumph of God over evil? So that really got me thinking about, there are places in the Bible where women are just slandered consistently throughout. And what do I do with that? As a person who kind of came to a Christian faith quite late in my life, and it was through study that I got there, I've always come to the Bible with a focus on how can I have that read into my life in a way that makes sense to me. So when I see all these women in the biblical text just being kind of images of them being crushed and raped and beaten and by men, by God as well, that kind of imagery just sits really, really difficult with me. So that kind of developed more into an interest in looking at violence within the Bible, looking at how the Bible inspires violence, looking at how the Bible can counter violence. And that's kind of the larger field in terms of how I then came to kind of putting all of those, put all of those interests together, and thinking about women and animals and nature all together. And I do want to mention just a really important piece of literature also, which kind of inspired this, which is Carol J. Adams' The Sexual Politics of Meat. So her work is very, very briefly, because obviously it's a lot more complex than I can describe it here. But her work basically looks at the ways in which we consume flesh, and how that kind of theory is applied to animals and the bodies of women, and how it all kind of shapes one narrative about how we kind of treat flesh that we feel we can commodify. And so I kind of wanted to just push that a step further by looking at these images in the Bible where women are lambs, and thinking, okay, well, there's a link here, not just between women and animal flesh like meat, but there's also a link here between women and fertile bodies of land. What do we do with this imagery? And what I kind of found was there's a whole body of ecofeminist work outside of the Christian tradition that already have been talking about the rape of lands as the rape of women, specifically within Native American and other indigenous contexts. That's a really important point to make actually here, is that the work being done by Native American scholars, indigenous scholars on colonialism and the raping of lands and bodies and body polities, that is all really crucial work to kind of underpin what I wanted to do, which was to bring that conversation into a Christian context with the Bible.
I mean, you've taken the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask you much to kind of expand a little bit more on that connection between environmental violence and gendered and sexual violence, because I'm a massive fan of Carol Adams' work. I think it's such a phenomenal piece. And as well, bringing up that kind of colonial aspect of it, Rape of the Wild was also one of those first texts that I read in environmentalism that always has stayed with me, in that that kind of imagery of rape in this environment. And in the biblical text as well, we get that quite a bit with alongside, when cities are plundered, it's women that are taken alongside kind of all the goods and all the things. Genesis 34, particularly with after the rape of, or the abduction of Dinah, and all the women of Shechem are taken from the city along with the cattle, and that land is destroyed, and just all those connections are brought up again. And coming back to the point about kind of the other, the foreign woman, particularly in the Hebrew Bible, those are the people that tend to be the ones that are kind of being raped. They are the ones that are taken captive. It's the foreign lands that are frequently, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this, and I'm not sure there is one, but there seems to be a connection between particularly foreign women and polluting and destroying the land, particularly in kind of the ideas about intermarriage. In Ezra, you get it again in Dinah with Genesis 34.
Yeah, yeah.
In Ezekiel 23, when you talk about it a bit in your paper, Ezekiel 16 and Ezekiel 23, but there's that use again of, I would love to go into the Hebrew. I haven't got it in front of me, so I can't, but I know that it's...
You don't have it by heart, Kat.
I don't have it by heart, it's really annoying. But I know that the same root, I think it's like Tumah, is used in Ezekiel, it's used in Ezra, and I think it's the same word that's used in Genesis 34. And it's really interesting when you bring in that colonial context that it's the foreign women here that are polluting or defiling the land.
Yeah.
I think it's really important when we're talking about this, that this needs to be an intersectional approach, particularly when we think about environmental violence, because like you summed it up so perfectly, that environmental violence is one of the most violent things that we can do as humans, and when we do that violence, we're enacting it on a specific group of people, because those people tend to be those that are kind of migrant workers, they are from indigenous groups, they are from minority backgrounds, they're working class, whatever. Those are the people that are ultimately affected by environmental violence. So it's so important, I think, that you're bringing in this kind of intersectional lens, but also broadening out of kind of white Christian approaches, which are, oh, we need to look after the environment, there needs to be this element of pastoral care. I wasn't really questioning that, I guess, but I
No, you're so right. And I think often in kind of Christian approaches to talking about the environment, we miss the colonialist and imperialist aspects of the problem completely. And it's so, once you bring that to bear on the dialogue, suddenly environmental violence becomes this much, much larger problem, which brings in so many different issues: the treatment of women, race, the treatment of indigenous cultures, lands and politics. All of that suddenly becomes part of the problem. And I feel like that's potentially why it hasn't really been prominent in church conversations about the environment and kind of Christian preaching about the environment as much as I think it needs to be. And it's because if we talk about those issues, we then have to deal with those issues, and they're difficult. But I think that, so one of the reasons that it's so important is because so Gail Yee, who's a really prominent Hebrew Bible scholar, she calls women the porous frontiers of nations. And I think that's such an incredible image, because it really captures how women are consistently, women produce babies of particular nationalities, right? So they, you know, they give birth to the members of those nations, just as lands give birth in a political way to particular nations. And women, we see it in the spoils of war. Women are spoils of war. We even see that in the Hebrew Bible. And the rape of foreign enemy women are one of the first ways that invaded cities, invaded lands are penetrated. So this the control of women's bodies and the control of bodies of lands are the same thing. They're central to national politics and body politics. And so women literally mark the boundaries of nations as they're raped in war. And I think that we can't ignore this kind of colonial aspect to it. Yeah, and you're completely right. You know, in some of the major reports on environmental violence, we're told again and again and again that the communities that are going to suffer most from environmental damage are minority communities, are majoritatively non-white communities, are less affluent communities. And funnily enough, they are also the groups of people who are least likely to be contributing to climate change, because they're not going on 4 foreign holiday long haul flights a year, you know? So, and of course there's a big debate also between kind of corporate responsibility and personal responsibility. Yeah. But, you know, I think that corporations are made of individual people making individual choices as a group. There's this kind of group think about corporations. And I think to say that individuals need not change their behavior because it doesn't do too much. Well, I think.
See, this is fascinating, because in that answer we've segued from, okay, Christian response, fire, women as the porous boundaries of nations and communities.
We have to come back to you, because I have so many thoughts on that.
There's so much there. My takeaway from that was, okay, we're talking about violence, we're talking about women bearing the brunt of climate change, we're talking about women literally being penetrated and their nations being penetrated kind of through them.
That's right.
But we've put that answer in the context of, this is for Christian communities to reflect on. So it just made me wonder, if your audience really primarily is Christian communities, what kind of response have you had to this?
Well, so...
Well, you're clearly aware this is controversial.
Yeah, so mixed. Mixed. Mainly women actually have had an overwhelmingly positive response to the paper. And I wonder if that's because they see the patterns of behaviour that they maybe have experienced in their own lives as women inhabiting women's bodies, and can kind of see the link through personal experience like that. I think I've had pushback kind of on two accounts mainly. The first one is that there's a great defensiveness about masculinity and the idea that a patriarchal system could be responsible for this. There's a real push to say not all men, which as we know is a massively problematic response, because it kind of again brushes off any responsibility for doing any kind of self-reflection as what we as individuals are contributing to a larger system of oppression. It also completely forgets that not women aren't all perfect environmentalists. Like women as a group, we have a lot of internalized misogyny as well that is due to this patriarchal system. So it's not the case that when we critique the patriarchy, what we're critiquing is men. What we're critiquing is the system that began from literally the beginning of civilization, where men working the fields realized that they could exert power over the fertility of the land, and then moving forward, how this same psychological schema was applied to the bodies of women, and we've ended up where we are today. So when we critique patriarchy, we critique this system of oppression that positions a very specific expression of masculinity over and above women, people of all genders and no gender, specifically non-conforming people as well, gender non-conforming people, and other expressions of masculinity as well. Mm-hmm. So heteronormativity, for example, is one of the real kind of expressions of this patriarchal hegemonic masculinity that creates this. But one of my pushbacks was, oh well, you know, you seem to be saying that patriarchy and every society is patriarchal, and we know that because of anthropology. And so are you saying that all of civilization has been oppressive and bad? And I'm kind of like, well, yeah, like, sorry, I don't know how to explain that to you in a way that is going to sit better. But yeah, the reason that we are in the place that we are now is because of a long system of oppressing various groups of people that don't match up to an idealized masculinity. And that's just how it is. And if that offends you, I invite you to reflect and be part of doing something to change that. The other kind of critique that I've had is, okay, that's great, that's all very well if you want to talk about rape language, this kind of offensive language that I use in my paper, building on a scholar, Jane Caputi, her work on motherfucking, which talks very specifically about the intersections between colonialism and environmental violence, and this idea that mankind is fucking the environment. Mm-hmm. The critique was, okay, well, that might sit very well in an academic setting, but how then do I take that into a church context? Because I have a feeling my congregation won't really want to hear that kind of language. And I guess I've kind of got two responses to that. And my first one would be that I am not ordained. I'm not a preacher. I don't lead a church. And there's probably very, very good reasons for that. And that's because my skill and my training lie in this kind of theoretical exercise where I look at broad systems of violence and I kind of pick them apart and put them back together and say, what are we doing with this now? And then my other response would be that it's not the case that when we kind of bring these intersections to light through the language that is in my paper that might be a little bit controversial, that needs to then be repeated word for word to a congregation in a church setting. Mm-hmm. But it does open up conversations that I think that congregations can be having about what really constitutes violence when we think about it? What is violence done to my neighbour? Are there places in my life where I am currently doing violence to other humans, and what might that look like? If I choose not to recycle, for instance, or if I choose to use disposable items continually, am I aware that I might be doing a violence to my neighbour? So, for example, the people who live by landfills that are overflowing and the contamination of the water that comes from issues like that. So I think that conversations that my work might elicit actually can be had quite easily in congregations if we talk about it in a way where we bring the Bible to meet with people's lives where they are right now. So I think that, I don't want to, there's no point in me doing this work if it doesn't ever inspire any change for better. And so I think that there needs to kind of be, maybe just a little bit more dialogue and a more openness between kind of academic theological study and then kind of practical theology, where we're moving that into church congregations.
Yeah, I completely agree. What's really struck me from your comments there about, and all the pushback you had, is that on the one hand, there seems to be a kind of a link. It's like, it's always been like this. Why should we do anything? And why should we be the ones to change it?
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, this has been happening for years. Like, this is a sorry shit show that's from beginning to end. Like,
yeah,
why should we be the ones to change it? But then also almost quite a visceral reaction in me is that we want to talk about violence as a nice thing that can be put in a box and we can come back to every so often and deal with it in our own time.
Yeah.
And when actually that's a lived reality for so many people that these texts have inspired. I mean, just thinking about kind of like colonialism, our history of colonialism as the British Empire is so founded on biblical ideals and biblical discussions, and I like the land of Canaan as a conquering image has kind of fed into all these discussions, and we treat it as this thing that we can come back to and process when we have time to deal with it, rather than something that's these people that are living next to the abattoirs, that live next to the pig farms that are being bred for bred for slaughter. There's no nice way to put it, but these are the people that daily violence in those kind of minute ways, actually, because these aren't the worst violences that people face by environmental in kind of destruction of the environment.
Yeah, sure. And that kind of we can deal with it when we're ready to have a think about this in our own time is such a white person luxury.
Yeah.
It's such a privileged position to be able to say, that's an issue which I potentially am, intentionally, but kind of unconsciously, I'm upholding that system with the actions that I kind of just do as part of my normal life. And to say, I don't want to reflect on that right now is such a privileged place to be. Yeah. And I just want a little bit of reflection on that, really, because if you're shocked by the language that is used in my paper or by any of the kind of topics that are discussed in the paper, like the rape of foreign women and this kind of comparison between rape and the fracking practices that we kind of subject on the land and issues of consent and things like that, then good. Like, I want you to be shocked by these things, because I think if you're able to hear about mass rape and the abuse of women and importantly, I do include transgender women in that, because who are overwhelmingly victims of violence. If you're not shocked by all of these things, then there's something going wrong. So I guess when people have a really visceral reaction to this particular paper, I'm not pleased that they're distressed, but part of me is like, okay, this doesn't sit well with you, so I know that you want to enter into a dialogue to kind of think about how we can change this. It's when people are completely non-responsive to this that I feel worried, because why are you not concerned? Why are you not shocked about the violence that is happening today?
Yeah, particularly in that church context, these are the texts you sit down to every Sunday or in in your Bible study classes or in whatever context you encounter these texts, you're encountering violent texts. And if this is almost the first introduction you've had to them as violent texts, because I think what your paper really drew out for me is that we can make these connections, and actually we should. There's a really effective way to communicate the wider environmental violence that is going on to a really specific location for dealing with these things, because I think a lot of the time environmental destruction and environmentalism gets talked about in a really abstract way with numbers and statistics. There's no personal connection for me. This is one thing I've struggled with, is there's no personal connection. I'm very privileged, I don't experience environmental violence on a daily level to the extent that other people do. So connecting it to a wider system of beliefs has been really fundamental for me in understanding and learning about this. So I think actually there's a really, really important part of what you're talking about is bringing these texts into conversation with these issues, because these are texts that people read every week or encounter on a regular basis. And if your paper can kind of ask them to think differently, or maybe they haven't, I mean, amazingly, if they haven't kind of recognized a lot of the rapes as rape, a whole other issue that needs unpacking. But if your paper can be like, oh, I hadn't thought of those connections before. Phenomenal, because there's so much here I want to talk about it, that I don't think we'll ever be done having this conversation. What a credit to your paper to do this.
It's all part of a responsible reading of scripture, to not gloss over the places in the Bible that are hugely problematic in some areas. It is hugely problematic, for example, that there are places in the Bible where Israel is compared to a kind of promiscuous wife, and the repairing, apparent repairing of the relationship between God and Israel is that God disciplines his wife Israel through domestic violence. And that's then after that he goes, oh, it's okay between us now. And what kind of message is that? If we're, for women in congregations who have experienced domestic violence, and there's a really great study in churches too, which was done a couple of years ago, which shows that actually a huge proportion of our congregations have had at least one incident of domestic violence or intimate partner violence in their lifetimes. So we have churches full of people, men and women, who have experienced domestic violence, and we're reading these texts where God acts as an abusive spouse. Mm-hmm. And we just chill with that. That doesn't sit right with me. And it's the same for the topic of this paper here with environmental violence. When we're reading places in the Bible where women as lands are plundered, raped, invaded, commodified. Mm-hmm. There's all this ownership of lands, and they're all embodied as women. What does that say? And it's just, I think it's a really, it's part of being responsible in the way that we teach, preach and read scripture, is that we address these issues. And, if we want to say that the Bible is a dynamic document that applies to the world in which we live today, then it needs to be able to speak properly on these issues. And they're all there in the text. And so to ignore them is just, I think a highly irresponsible way to speak. Which actually brings me to just really quickly talking about ways in which this can kind of be dealt with. So at the end of my paper, I talk a little bit about, very, very briefly, because it's not really my area, about trauma theology and whether we could apply some of the techniques that we use in engaging with women and people who have suffered from kind of sexual or misogynistic violence in kind of trauma care, whether there's any way that we can take those kind of practices and apply them to moving forward in terms of care for the earth. But also there's Jewish feminist scholars have been engaging in doing what's called feminist midrash for a really, really long time with the texts, their Hebrew texts. And it kind of involves understanding that places in the text where things sit really uncomfortably with us because it's violent, or there are women who are unnamed who go through violence, all of those are in the text specifically as invitations by God to exegesis and to dig further and to pull that text apart and figure out what is going on. And I think that that is such an incredible model for looking at religious scripture, that I think that really any religion could kind of take that concept. I mean, obviously Midrash is a very specifically Jewish thing, but taking that concept of, okay, this violence against women's bodies and bodies of lands as one image in the Bible, this is here. And so what do we do with it? Well, I'm going to treat that as an invitation to dig deeper and pull this apart. So yeah, to gloss over it in that way is problematic.
Yeah, I think I think that most of this is just me, like, I completely agree with you. the idea that land and women are so, like, frequently and intimately connected is so clear within the text that we need to take this issue seriously and unpack that connection, because women are land. Women are, when they can't produce, are described as kind of barren and desolate. Yeah, that's right. And land is women. Women, the land is always described as something that could be raped, as you've pointed out, or something.
Yeah, and I mean, we see this in loads of agricultural language as well. I mean, think of the language that we use, like plough and screw and drill. Like, all of these have at some point been used as kind of slang terms for sexual intercourse as well. Like, there is, even within the language that we use to talk about the way in which we treat the earth, has such parallels with the language that we use kind of colloquially to talk about sex as well. It's kind of there hasn't really been pushback on the paper in terms of not being able to recognize the similarity between kind of sexual violence and misogynistic violence and environmental violence. It's just a kind of, well, what do we do now with it, that's been the main problem, kind of aside from the defensiveness about masculinity. That's been kind of the main pushback.
That's one thing I will say as well. I think there's a really interesting conversation that probably won't be discussed here about masculinity and what we do with masculinity and environmental violence, because so often it's framed in the context of care, that pastoral element, which is so tied with kind of gender roles and feminine gender roles. One thing I have had a brief conversation with people about is the, like, particularly dietary changes in veganism, about veganism being often framed as kind of a holistic and health or kind of care thing that is framed in quite feminine ways. And then the documentary on Netflix, like Game Changers, I think it's called, being suddenly flipping that switch and framing veganism and plant-based eating in a masculine way, because it was a way to achieve kind of ideals of masculinity and working out and bodybuilding and all that. And I find that really interesting. I think there's I don't have an answer. I don't think any of us probably have an answer for this, but there's conversations about what you do then as I suppose masculinity questions tied up with the history of colonizers question as well, when you are the perpetrator of that violence.
Inherently you have to talk about masculinity in any kind of conversation where misogyny and patriarchy have been the drivers of a particular behavior. You have to address masculinity. So I think one of the things I mentioned in my paper is this research done by Anselm and Hultman. So they did a whole bunch of research with climate change deniers. And the findings of their research were so interesting because it showed that for climate skeptics, their issue wasn't that the environment, kind of, they didn't really care much about the environment, but it was this idea that the industrialization that's almost symbolized their masculinity or symbolized the building of their kind of the building of masculinity through industry and through success, that was the issue. So they say, for example, in their research, it was not the environment that was threatened to them. So they didn't consider the environment to be threatened by environmental damage. They considered that it was a kind of modern industrial society built and dominated by their form of masculinity that was threatened. So they perceived environmental climate change activists actually to be a threat on their way of life and maintaining that way of life. And I think that's really, really interesting, because I think that actually climate change denial and environmental violence denial is massively caught up in the practice of hegemonic masculinity. And by that, I'm referring to kind of, you know, Connell's understanding of hegemonic masculinity as being the dominant masculinity which seeks to oppress and subjugate other masculinities and femininity and, you know, multiple genders. Mm. So that really is like a really key part of the conversation. We need to be talking about masculinity because it's the driver behind all of this. And it's very comfortable to want to protect the status quo. But when the status quo keeps you in power, it's very easy to see why you would have a pushback against any kind of, you know, theoretical work that seeks to take that position of power away and distribute it a little more evenly.
100%. And I also think there's probably a connection there with the kind of building of cities and some sort of like phallic imagery.
Sure.
Underlying that. There's,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's the conversation that's already been had.
Work. So I'm sitting here going, oh, we need to self-reflect, but it is difficult because it takes a lot of humility to put aside defensiveness and say, oh my gosh, you know, for ages actually I have been kind of uncritically contributing to this system and I need to change. And that takes a lot of self-reflection, it takes a lot of growth, it takes a lot of courage actually. So I think, yeah, one of the last things I would say is that people who kind of want to get more involved in thinking about this on a deeper level, be courageous enough to link misogyny and environmental violence and where you might sit in upholding bits of that system and be courageous.
I also think one of the last things we should say is where can they read your paper? Should they be interested in the connections that we've spoken about? Because we've jumped all over your paper and just kind of butchered it. butchered is a great word here.
Butchered it, yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to be presenting this paper again at a conference in May. So that is the conference that the Centre for the Study of Bible and Violence are holding in the Emerging Scholars portion of that conference, which is running over a few days, so you guys can hear it there. It will be a shortened version of the full paper, obviously, because it's just for a short presentation. I'm not sure if this is something that's going to go into an edited volume, in which case it might end up being a little bit embargoed until that time. I'm not sure, but if anybody wanted to reach out to me, I would be absolutely happy to email over a PDF of this kind of first version of the paper if anybody is interested in reading it, and then maybe in the future we might see it in print, who knows.
I hope we do, because I think this conversation has just shown how rich this topic of discussion is, because I probably could go for another hour of discussing it with you. But unfortunately we don't have the time to do that, so thank you, Lottie. Thank you for coming in and talking about this, and I hope this is kind of the beginning of these conversations that we will have.
Sure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. It's been brilliant. You've been listening to Ancient Afterlives. If you'd like to contact us, you can email ancientafterlives@gmail.com or find us on Twitter. Thanks for listening.